2026年実施第2回8月東大本番レベル模試。この問題の音声は本番の教室環境を想定したやや聞きづらい音になっています。これから聞き取り試験を始めます。問題冊子の14ページを開いてください。第3問、放送を聞いて問題 A、B、C に答えなさい。A、B、C のいずれも2回ずつ放送されます。放送を聞きながらメモを取っても構いません。また、放送が終わった後もこの問題の回答を続けて構いません。では、A を始めます。問題 A。これから放送するのは、ある文章を読み上げた音声です。これを聞き、6から10の問いに対して、それぞれ最も適切な答えを1つ選び、マークシートの6から10にその記号をマークしてください。では、A を始めます。
Wayfinding is how humans have found their way for most of our existence. It's what enabled the Aboriginals, Arab nomads, and Inuits to journey across huge deserts of sand and ice.And it's how the Pacific Islanders used heavenly bodies and ocean swells to travel across a vast ocean to trade, fish, and discover new lands. Over time, however, wayfinding all but vanished. Today, even basic navigation feels difficult because we live in such a device-saturated world. Many of us have jobs that require us to stare at a screen for hours a day,and subscribe to a plug-in, tune-out culture on our commutes. We've been conditioned to hate waiting. We whip out our phones the moment we come to a standstill. Where does that leave room to observe what's happening around us? Human beings are in this smartphone-induced fog, says physicist John Huth at Harvard University. As part of a natural navigation course he teaches,Huth gets students to guess where west is and to walk in that direction for 20 minutes before estimating the distance they've covered. He also takes them to the roof of Harvard's Science Center to observe the stars. For a lot of students, it's an important moment because all of a sudden, they're looking at the world differently, he says. Explorer Tristan Gooley, called the Sherlock Holmes of Nature,runs an online school for natural navigation. I promise you the brain just loves it, he says. Navigation is like a puzzle where you bring together pieces of information to make sense of something wider. There's almost no other activity where you're exercising your brain in a more positive way. The mental health benefits that come from being fully immersed in nature, like when you're sailing, are echoed by many Pacific Island navigators.They agree that it makes them feel peaceful, that it's very therapeutic, and helps reset your focus. Wayfinding and its associated skills can also boost brain health. When we're learning an area, trying to put together a new route, or figuring out how far apart things are, we rely primarily on the hippocampus, says Liz Krastiel, an associate professor of neurobiology at University of California.The hippocampus, a pair of seahorse-shaped masses located toward the back of your head, is responsible for orientation, spatial cognition, and memory. In one famous study, researchers discovered that London cab drivers, who must memorize the city's 25,000 sprawling streets and their landmarks to qualify for a license, have much larger hippocampi compared to non-cab drivers.It's a noteworthy finding, given how our reliance on GPS means fewer opportunities for active navigation today. The hippocampus is like a muscle. Krastiel says, and without regular exercise, it's a case of use it or lose it. Smaller hippocampus size has been linked with numerous conditions. These include schizophrenia, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and Alzheimer's disease.The key to preserving good hippocampal health is to keep feeding it novel information so you're constantly learning. For example, try switching off turn-by-turn directions and using your digital map like a paper one, or look up a route beforehand and memorize it for the journey ahead. If you have more time, you could wander in a general direction and soak up the information around you, such as where the sun is overhead and which direction the wind is blowing.
これで1回目の放送は終わりです。およそ30秒後に2回目を放送します。では、2回目を放送します。
Wayfinding is how humans have found their way for most of our existence. It's what enabled the Aboriginals, Arab nomads, and Inuits to journey across huge deserts of sand and ice. And it's how the Pacific Islanders used heavenly bodies and ocean swells to travel across a vast ocean to trade, fish, and discover new lands. Over time, however,Wayfinding all but vanished. Today, even basic navigation feels difficult because we live in such a device-saturated world. Many of us have jobs that require us to stare at a screen for hours a day and subscribe to a plug-in, tune-out culture on our commutes. We've been conditioned to hate waiting. We whip out our phones the moment we come to a standstill.Where does that leave room to observe what's happening around us? Human beings are in this smartphone-induced fog, says physicist John Huth at Harvard University. As part of a natural navigation course he teaches, Huth gets students to guess where west is and to walk in that direction for 20 minutes before estimating the distance they've covered. He also takes them to the roof of Harvard's Science Center to observe the stars.For a lot of students, it's an important moment because all of a sudden, they're looking at the world differently, he says. Explorer Tristan Gooley, called the Sherlock Holmes of Nature, runs an online school for natural navigation. I promise you the brain just loves it, he says. Navigation is like a puzzle where you bring together pieces of information to make sense of something wider.There's almost no other activity where you're exercising your brain in a more positive way. The mental health benefits that come from being fully immersed in nature, like when you're sailing, are echoed by many Pacific Island navigators. They agree that it makes them feel peaceful, that it's very therapeutic, and helps reset your focus. Wayfinding and its associated skills can also boost brain health. When we're learning an area,trying to put together a new route, or figuring out how far apart things are, we rely primarily on the hippocampus, says Liz Krastil, an associate professor of neurobiology at University of California. The hippocampus, a pair of seahorse-shaped masses located toward the back of your head, is responsible for orientation, spatial cognition, and memory.In one famous study, researchers discovered that London cab drivers, who must memorize the city's 25,000 sprawling streets and their landmarks to qualify for a license, have much larger hippocampi compared to non-cab drivers. It's a noteworthy finding, given how our reliance on GPS means fewer opportunities for active navigation today. The hippocampus is like a muscle. Krastil says,And without regular exercise, it's a case of use it or lose it. Smaller hippocampus size has been linked with numerous conditions. These include schizophrenia, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and Alzheimer's disease. The key to preserving good hippocampal health is to keep feeding it novel information so you're constantly learning. For example, try switching off turn-by-turn directionsand using your digital map like a paper one, or look up a route beforehand and memorize it for the journey ahead. If you have more time, you could wander in a general direction and soak up the information around you, such as where the sun is overhead and which direction the wind is blowing.
これで A は終わりです。およそ1分後に B を放送します。では B を始めます。問題 B。これから放送するのはインタビューの一部です。これを聞き、11から15の問いに対してそれぞれ最も適切な答えを一つ選び、マークシートの11から15にその記号をマークしてください。では B を始めます。
In Decoding Greatness, How the Best in the World Reverse Engineer Success,Ron Friedman provides a blueprint for learning and adopting practices that will help you get to the next level of your success journey. Ron, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been conditioned to believe that success is all about talent and practice. You talk about another way. Tell us about it.
Most of us grew up with two basic stories about how top performers achieve at the highest levels.The first is that greatness comes from talent, certain innate strengths. The second is that it comes from a lot of practice and hard work. But in my research, a third story has emerged. This story is all about reverse engineering, which means studying the best in a field and working backward to figure out how they did it.
Would you share a few examples of people who use this reverse engineering technique?
In Silicon Valley, there's a long history of coders deconstructing winning products to learn how they're made. It's how we got the personal computer and laptops and the iPhone. In the historical showdown between Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, Jobs claimed that Gates stole Apple technology to create Windows. He was understandably furious, but the truth is that both Jobs and Gates used reverse engineering to learn from Xerox.And take its technology in different directions. And it's not just Silicon Valley. It's how writers like Stephen King and Malcolm Gladwell learned their craft, and how painters like Pablo Picasso and Claude Monet became groundbreaking artists, and even how Judd Apatow became one of the most successful comedy writers of our generation. Studying the best works in a field and working backward to figure out how they were created.Turns out to be far more common than anyone has realized.
Once you identify someone who has mastery over the area you desire, how do you decode that person's success?
The first step is to start a collection of outstanding examples so that you can look for hidden patterns. When we think of collections, we tend to think of physical objects like artwork, wine, or stamps. That's too limited. Think about copywriters collecting headlinesand designers collecting logos. Once you've gathered great examples, the next step is to figure out what makes them compelling. It's just like playing Spot the Difference as a kid. You compare things side by side and find the differences.
Some people will complain that they can't find a mentor. Would you share a story about how that problem can be overcome?
When Judd Apatow was 15, he was a comedy fanatic with no one to teach him how to become a comedian.One day, he noticed that the teenage DJ at his high school's radio station was landing interviews with impressive bands. So he started reaching out to agents, inviting their clients to radio interviews, neglecting to tell them that the school station's signal barely reached the parking lot. That approach is how he interviewed famous performers like Jerry Seinfeld and Jay Leno. Through those interviews, he was able to reverse engineer their success.He learned how to write jokes, how to get started in the business, and how to master the craft. Today, anyone can use their approach through podcasts and blog interviews.
What are some ways that you can go wrong in reverse engineering?
If all you're doing is copying someone else's formula, you're likely to fall short. That's because you don't always have the same abilities as the person you're reverse engineering, and audience expectations shift with time. The key is to reverse engineer a winning formula, and then evolve it by adding your unique twist.
これで1回目の放送は終わりです。およそ30秒後に2回目を放送します。では、2回目を放送します。
In Decoding Greatness, How the Best in the World Reverse Engineer Success, Ron Friedman provides a blueprint for learning and adopting practices that will help you get to the next level of your success journey. Ron, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been conditioned to believe that success is all about talent and practice. You talk about another way. Tell us about it.
Most of us grew up with two basic stories about how top performers achieve at the highest levels. The first is that greatness comes from talent, certain innate strengths. The second is that it comes from a lot of practice and hard work. But in my research, a third story has emerged. This story is all about reverse engineering, which means studying the best in a field and working backward to figure out how they did it.
Would you share a few examples of people who use this reverse engineering technique?
In Silicon Valley, there's a long history of coders deconstructing winning products to learn how they're made. It's how we got the personal computer and laptops and the iPhone. In the historical showdown between Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, Jobs claimed that Gates stole Apple technology to create Windows. He was understandably furious. But the truth is that both Jobs and Gates used reverse engineering to learn from Xerox and take its technology in different directions. And it's not just Silicon Valley. It's how writers like Stephen King and Malcolm Gladwell learned their craft, and how painters like Pablo Picasso and Claude Monet became groundbreaking artists, and even how Judd Apatow became one of the most successful comedy writers of our generation. Studying the best works in a field and working backward to figure out how they were created turns out to be far more common than anyone has realized.
Once you identify someone who has mastery over the area you desire, how do you decode that person's success?
The first step is to start a collection of outstanding examples so that you can look for hidden patterns. When we think of collections, we tend to think of physical objects like artwork, wine, or stamps. That's too limited. Think about copywriters collecting headlines and designers collecting logos. Once you've gathered great examples, the next step is to figure out what makes them compelling. It's just like playing Spot the Difference as a kid. You compare things side by side and find the differences.
Some people will complain that they can't find a mentor. Would you share a story about how that problem can be overcome?
When Judd Apatow was 15, he was a comedy fanatic with no one to teach him how to become a comedian. One day, he noticed that the teenage DJ at his high school's radio station was landing interviews with impressive bands. So he started reaching out to agents, inviting their clients to radio interviews, neglecting to tell them that the school station's signal barely reached the parking lot. That approach is how he interviewed famous performers like Jerry Seinfeld and Jay Leno. Through those interviews, he was able to reverse engineer their success. He learned how to write jokes, how to get started in the business, and how to master the craft. Today, anyone can use their approach through podcasts and blog interviews.
What are some ways that you can go wrong in reverse engineering?
If all you're doing is copying someone else's formula, you're likely to fall short. That's because you don't always have the same abilities as the person you're reverse engineering. And audience expectations shift with time. The key is to reverse engineer a winning formula and then evolve it by adding your unique twist.
これで B は終わりです。およそ1分後に C を放送します。では C を始めます。問題 C。これから放送するのはある講義の音声です。これを聞き、16から20の問いに対してそれぞれ最も適切な答えを一つ選び、マークシートの16から20にその記号をマークしてください。では C を始めます。
Today, I want to talk with you about one of the most urgent frontiers of earth science, mapping the ocean floor.When we think about the sea, we often imagine waves, coastlines, or marine life near the surface. But beneath the water lies a landscape as vast and varied as any continent, and yet still largely unknown. Now, as for my mapping company, the top priority in mapping the seafloor is energy. Increasingly, humanity is looking to the ocean as a source of renewable power. Wave energy and offshore wind energy are growing rapidly.To build turbines offshore, we need to know exactly where the seafloor is flat enough to install foundations and what the seafloor is made of. Is it sandy, muddy, or rocky? Only with this knowledge can we install large structures safely and efficiently. A second major reason is fisheries and habitat. Much of the protein we eat from the ocean comes from ecosystems that depend on the seafloor. If we cannot monitor and protect these habitats,We risk losing valuable fisheries forever. Detailed bathymetric maps, maps of undersea topography, allow us to locate these ecosystems and safeguard them for the future. Another critical reason is the global internet. We sometimes think of the internet as floating in the cloud, but in fact, 99% of all international internet traffic is carried by submarine cables laid on the seafloor.Everything from streaming videos to social media to business transactions flows through this hidden infrastructure. At my organization, we create global maps of these cables, helping governments, companies, and the public understand the systems that connect our world. Without these cables, modern digital life would collapse. All of these are connected to a larger international initiative called Seabed 2030, led by the Nippon Foundation and JETCO.The aim is to map the entire seafloor by 2030. When the project began, only about 6% of the ocean floor had been mapped in detail. By 2025, that number rose to over 27%. With cooperation from industries that already possess unreleased bathymetric data, we hope to reach 40% soon. The progress is exciting, but the challenge remains immense. Importantly,Seabed 2030 is not just a project for governments and scientists. Nonprofits like Map the Gaps are working to make seafloor data open access and to involve more people. Even private boat owners can help. Using relatively inexpensive equipment, they can collect depth data while out at sea. This democratization of mapping is represented by the phrase cheap and deep.It would be a mistake to think that our needs amount to nothing but billion-dollar research ships. But what happens if we fail to map the seafloor? The risks are serious. Without accurate bathymetry, we cannot fully understand tsunami risks or storm surges that threaten coastal cities. We will struggle to predict sea level rise and shoreline change. Valuable fisheries may vanish without notice. Our ports and shipping lanes could face security challenges. And when disasters strike, such as the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines flight MH370, our lack of maps makes search and rescue nearly impossible. The conclusion is clear. The longer it takes to map our seafloor, the greater the risks we face. From public safety to food security, from renewable energy to global communications, seafloor mapping underpins modern life. It is not just an academic exercise. It is a global responsibility. Thank you.
これで1回目の放送は終わりです。およそ30秒後に2回目を放送します。では、2回目を放送します。
Today, I want to talk with you about one of the most urgent frontiers of earth science, mapping the ocean floor. When we think about the sea, we often imagine waves, coastlines, or marine life near the surface. But beneath the water lies a landscape as vast and varied as any continent, and yet still largely unknown. Now, as for my mapping company,The top priority in mapping the seafloor is energy. Increasingly, humanity is looking to the ocean as a source of renewable power. Wave energy and offshore wind energy are growing rapidly. To build turbines offshore, we need to know exactly where the seafloor is flat enough to install foundations and what the seafloor is made of. Is it sandy, muddy, or rocky? Only with this knowledge can we install large structures safely and efficiently.A second major reason is fisheries and habitat. Much of the protein we eat from the ocean comes from ecosystems that depend on the seafloor. If we cannot monitor and protect these habitats, we risk losing valuable fisheries forever. Detailed bathymetric maps, maps of undersea topography, allow us to locate these ecosystems and safeguard them for the future. Another critical reason is the global internet.We sometimes think of the internet as floating in the cloud, but in fact, 99% of all international internet traffic is carried by submarine cables laid on the seafloor. Everything from streaming videos to social media to business transactions flows through this hidden infrastructure. At my organization, we create global maps of these cables, helping governments, companies, and the public understand the systems that connect our world.Without these cables, modern digital life would collapse. All of these are connected to a larger international initiative called Seabed 2030, led by the Nippon Foundation and JETCO. The aim is to map the entire seafloor by 2030. When the project began, only about 6% of the ocean floor had been mapped in detail. By 2025, that number rose to over 27%.With cooperation from industries that already possess unreleased bathymetric data, we hope to reach 40% soon. The progress is exciting, but the challenge remains immense. Importantly, Seabed 2030 is not just a project for governments and scientists. Nonprofits like Map the Gaps are working to make seafloor data open access and to involve more people. Even private boat owners can help.Using relatively inexpensive equipment, they can collect depth data while out at sea. This democratization of mapping is represented by the phrase cheap and deep. It would be a mistake to think that our needs amount to nothing but billion-dollar research ships. But what happens if we fail to map the seafloor? The risks are serious. Without accurate bathymetry,We cannot fully understand tsunami risks or storm surges that threaten coastal cities. We will struggle to predict sea level rise and shoreline change. Valuable fisheries may vanish without notice. Our ports and shipping lanes could face security challenges. And when disasters strike, such as the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines flight MH370, Our lack of maps makes search and rescue nearly impossible. The conclusion is clear. The longer it takes to map our seafloor, the greater the risks we face. From public safety to food security, from renewable energy to global communications, seafloor mapping underpins modern life. It is not just an academic exercise. It is a global responsibility. Thank you.
これで聞き取り問題の放送を終わります。このまま回答を続けても構いませんし、他の問題の回答に移っても構いません。